Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, had a meeting with Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader, prospective Democratic speaker if they win the House. And a lot of people are not happy about it. What do you think?
Well, I mean, so the story is that Kushner asked for this meeting with Jeffries and wanted to talk about affordability. They talked about a couple of different things. And then, you know, also he suggested that Jeffries talk to White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles. You know, I can see why people are upset about this. You know, what Jeffries is actually thinking about doing and kind of why he's doing this is a little bit of a question. I mean, I think the first thing that makes it questionable is I think that people are going to expect a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate to really start to hold this administration accountable. And, you know, Jared Kushner is probably the person, other than maybe Donald Trump himself, who has profited the most from this administration. And, you know, why are you taking a meeting with this guy? He doesn't have a job for the government. He is, you know, he's the president's son-in-law, and he's very influential. And why? But he's also making billions of dollars off of his father-in-law being the president of the United States. So, like, he's going to be one of the people that needs to be looked at closest. And so I think people are, you know, kind of rightfully upset that Jeffries would be sitting down and just having a conversation with him. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, one of the first things I was taught in politics was don't confuse position with power. Yeah. There are a lot of people who have jobs, but don't really have a lot of power. A lot of people who don't have jobs, but they actually call the shots. So you got to better figure out the difference between those. And yeah, Jared Kushner seems to be an insider here.
He's definitely an insider. And it's not even like, even for him, it's not necessarily about the power. It's about how he's using his proximity to power to enrich himself and to enrich the Trump family. So he's definitely going to be one of the people that's going to need to be looked at immediately as soon as the Democrats take back the House, if they are able to do it in the fall. So
what's smart is what they did today is they leaked something. So Jeffries and Kushner had this meeting. It gets leaked. People get upset about it. It's been a bunch of like 24 hours sort of, you know, wringing our hands about it. And then the day after that, the House, your congressman from Maryland, the investigation, Judiciary Committee.
Jamie Raskin.
Thank you very much.
Jamie Raskin.
Yeah. Yes. Literally, right?
Yeah.
Jamie Raskin lets it out that they are expanding their probe into Jared Kushner's business dealings, right? In the Democratic caucus. So I think like they're pushing back on this pretty effectively. And Jeffrey said himself, nobody's going to get a free pass. Even though I guess he's had the meeting. So they're trying to like show that in a real way.
Yeah. And look, the other side of the argument is, you know, if Hakeem Jeffries is going to be the Speaker of the House, which it does look like it, his job is to deliver for the American people. And we actually do need a lot of stuff passed that's going to make living in America more affordable. So there is a sort of responsible politician kind of, you know, aspect to this. And so, you know, I guess taking a meeting with anybody and talking with anybody is probably a decent idea to keep lines of communications open, even if you disagree with the person, and maybe you're even going to investigate them. But, you know, if anything's going to get passed, you're going to need to get through the Trump White House. And so that if you're going to try to get something done, you know, it's not terrible to have these lines of communications open. It is interesting that Jared's asking for it now, though, because it definitely means that the administration thinks that this is going to be a Democratic House come January.
Yeah, I look at it like this. It was the right meeting to do. It was the wrong timing to do it. Right. Because Democratic forces are not ready to figure out what the terms of engagement are in the post government. They're still girding for battle, you know, waging the war. Let's see how good we can do. And then like, let's get to the negotiation. Yeah. And I think it's that whiff that the Democrat establishment might be, planning the negotiation instead of trying to plan the pushdown, like, you know, the conquest of the Republican Congress. I think that's gotten them in trouble.
Yeah, it's almost like Jared Kushner sort of jumped the line on this and like, oh, well, let's get this conversation started before everybody on our side has had a chance to weigh in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on our side, we have this sort of, I call it the get even lane and the kind of the get ahead lane. Right? The get even is like, let's go back and show those Republicans what they did to us. We're going to like investigate them. We're going to fight hard. The other side is like, okay, so what can American families do to get ahead? How are we going to help lower costs? How are we going to help make the country work and get some of these policies passed? And so the speaker or to be had got to be able to balance both of those things.
For sure.
where he goes after the crooks, as he said, hold the crooks accountable. And on the other hand, they also have to make a progress for the American people, as you just mentioned a minute ago.
Yeah, and the issue is going to be is, you know, the way to get through to that progress, unfortunately, is going to be the crooks holding the keys to that passage. And so, you know, you're going to be in a really tough space. And like, do you deliver on affordability and some legislation there? Like, did they trade that for, you know, having a smaller investigation or sort of a lighter investigation? I think that's going to be a very interesting question going into next year.
And maybe there'll be a couple of people who catch the brick, right? There'll be a couple of people who really get taken after, and
yeah,
particularly some of the princelings, right? These kids of government officials, Steve Witkoff's kid, Letnik's kid, Trump's kids, you know, like they've got all that question. But maybe not everybody initially, right? So you get a couple of people who really get brought in and they've got to pay the piper, and some others, you know, who get getting investigated, and we'll see where the investigations lead. So you've been checking out the Kalshi numbers, looking at the markets, and what are they telling us about this crop of 2028 candidates?
Well, we've got some big, big changes. A brand new person at the top of the list, and that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She is coming in at about 19% on Kalshi and about similar on Polymarket, you know, which is, you know, that's, it's completely, you know, she was down at, you know, she was around 10 at the beginning of the year. And so that has kind of come up substantially. And most of it is at the expense of Gavin Newsom, who, you know, at the beginning of the year was trading around 33. And I think he maybe was even as high as 36 around Thanksgiving last year, but he's all the way down to 14 now. The other person who's come up quite a bit is John Ossoff. He was around 6 in January. He's now trading at 17. So clearly, AOC and John Ossoff, from a prediction market standpoint, have had the best 2026 so far.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I think John Ossoff, everywhere you go, people are asking questions about him these days. You know, he's got a big social media following. Apparently, there's some, you may have seen these hot John Ossoff memes that are all over the internet. So the ladies, you know, the ladies like him. And maybe not just the ladies, a lot of people like him.
Everybody likes him.
And Newsom, you said, is down to 13.
He's down, 14, I think. 14 today. Yeah. So down from 33 at the beginning of the year. Look, I think John Ossoff is sort of benefiting from what the same sort of circumstances that Gavin Newsom was last year, right? Newsom was very much always in Trump's face. He was picking fights with him. He was all over social media. Remember, he was like tweeting out in all caps and really getting under Trump's skin. You know, Newsom hasn't been quite as front and center this year. John Ossoff, because he's got a Senate race, and because he's got a great team behind him who's putting together these amazing events that are getting great footage, that they are doing really, really great job of clipping them into bite-sized social media pieces and your short-form videos. He is everywhere right now, and he's one of the leading voices against Trump. And so people are just lapping it up. So that, and I think that the increase in both his poll numbers and in his Kalshi kind of standings and predictive market standings is showing us that.
So I looked up the Real Clear Politics averages just to see how they might compare what was happening in predictive markets. So they're completely different.
Yep.
You might be surprised.
Totally. Yeah, different. They think Kamala Harris is going to be the president.
They got Kamala Harris at 27.6, Gavin above 16,
yep.
Pete Buttigieg at 11.6, AOC at 9.4, and Mark Kelly at 6.8. They don't even really register John Ossoff in the top, you know, the top kind of 8 or 9 people. So it's what's really interesting is that Ossoff seems to be moving at a faster pace, maybe, than what the polls are picking up.
Right. Well, and that's the nature of prediction markets, right? These are people who are putting money into these races. So they are people who are naturally paying much more attention to the political situation and what's going on. They're people who probably, like, their feeds are inundated with kind of these political clips. It's not normal human beings who are, you know, picking up the phone or responding to a text poll, kind of saying, like, who do you want to see as the next Democratic nominee? That's a much more a broad audience, and they are much more, it's about name recognition and who they've heard of before. And so Kamala Harris, being the former vice president of the United States, being a former United States senator, I mean, she's been in our lives for the last 10 years. I mean, she's clearly going to be winning that kind of name recognition and sort of just people recognizing who she is and knowing who she is.
Yeah, and apparently there was an Emerson poll that also happened recently, which looked at comparing these particular Democrats who might be interested versus the Republicans, who were the front runners, Vance and Rubio.
Yep.
And what we saw from that, just from the few, Buttigieg was leading both Rubio and Vance, Ossoff leading both Rubio and Vance, Gavin Newsom leading both, Kamala and AOC more competitive, not really with the same kind of advantages. So it does seem like, you know, people are thinking about this, about strength, who can take on the, you know, the current Republicans and might be able to beat them. And that might be playing into this. Even though people like AOC, the question is whether or not they think she can win a national election.
Yeah. So AOC's, I mean, part of her rise has been the couple of election results that we have seen over the last couple of weeks. So El Sayed winning in Michigan was a big deal. And then also the race that just happened, Nixon in Florida, you know, the sort of the DSA candidate winning there. You know, look, I mean, AOC is not going to want to be judged by the results of that race. I mean, that's still going to be a very, very tough race for Nixon to win in Florida. But El Sayed has a pretty good chance of winning in Michigan, and it's going to be close, but I think he's probably going to pull it out, and that is going to be really good for AOC in answering these questions of, is you know, somebody that is so far left electable in this country?
Well, you know, there are two questions, as you know. The first question is, can you get nominated?
Yep.
And the second question is, you know, what's the likelihood you get nominated?
Yep.
The second question is the likelihood that you can actually win the whole White House. And those are related questions, but they're not necessarily like the same. I think a lot of people picked Trump. I don't know if they really thought he might win the election in 2016, but they liked him for the Republican nomination.
Yeah, I mean, this is where we kind of get into the situation of people playing pundit on their own, right? Like, I may like AOC, but I'm not voting for her because I don't think she can win the general election. You know, and so we're going to choose the next person. I have no evidence to back this up, but it feels like Democrats do that more than the Republicans do. And so people were willing to take a flyer on Trump and, you know, just kind of go with it. But, you know, we're always kind of like second guessing who the best person would be. I mean, we're doing it in all these primaries and all of these different, you know, in Wisconsin and Michigan, all of these different kind of midterm primaries, we're doing it as well.
So this is interesting as we think about the presidential nominating calendar, because one group of people who pointedly say this, I mean, they don't really hide it, are a lot of African-American voters who have, from the beginning, since the 1860s, when Black people were able to really vote, have had to sort of play this game of who do I like versus who do I think the average white person in America might vote for. And then, so what you're seeing in a place like South Carolina, where they're even more moderate than like a Michigan or Wisconsin or someplace, some of those voters, you might actually see a more moderate Joe Biden, a more moderate candidate come out of a South Carolina, even though it's going to be a heavily African-American electorate.
I think that's right, and it makes a lot of sense. You know, and I think I'm curious to see whether South Carolina is actually going to have a little bit less kind of like long lasting influence on this race. I mean, who wins that contest is going to be incredibly important. But if there are four or five candidates that have the resources to stay in for the next 5, 6, 8, 10 to make it to Super Tuesday, South Carolina's influence is going to go down and down as you get farther away from that. I mean, you know, I think we've been talking about Kamala Harris is like probably the most advantaged by having South Carolina up at the top. And so, but if the expectation is that she's just going to run away with that primary and then it's close, that's bad for her. If she doesn't win it, then, you know, she's basically done. And even if she does win it, how long does that last when you get into New Hampshire, Nevada, New Mexico, Virginia? So we'll have to see what happens with that.
I mean, people, you know, we always do these things with lanes and people will sort this out, but, you know, I'll say this because it's easier for me to do it than it is for you to do it. But there might be an African American lane, right? So who's the Black candidate that wins South Carolina? Then there might be like a who's the white candidate that comes in South Carolina? Like, let's say Gavin Newsom comes in a close second, right? To Westmore or to Kamala Harris. That might matter. But then that also might matter to Bashir. Right. Because people may be thinking, you know, about who's the Southerner. Maybe they'll discount his win because he was a Southerner.
Right.
And then they'll say, well, let's see what happens after that. So if you're the white non-Southerner, that comes in. That might also matter. People will play a lot of mental gymnastics, I think, when we actually get into the contest.
Yeah, and I think it's also how this the rest of this field is going to play out will matter, right? I mean, because you've sort of got AOC and Ro Khanna on the left, and then everybody else is much closer to the middle, and figuring out who's going to come out of that. I mean, it's going to be a couple of candidates that come out, but who is that going to be? Is it going to be Bashir and Wes Moore and, you know, Rahm Emanuel, or is it going to be Gavin Newsom and Pete Buttigieg? Like, we have to see. And so how you set yourself up is going to depend on who else is still in the race by the time we get to the actual primaries.